Okay, are there any more questions? Yes, Mike?
Well, I hate to keep coming back to the state of the building and grounds, but for instance, Lincoln is the only school that I know that has 21 shacks. Now, we call them shacks. The official name would be bungalows or temporary classrooms. But these were put in 20 years ago and called temporary. And this is not the type of bungalow that they've been installing lately around the schools, these nice ultra-modern ones with the fluorescent lights and the carpets. But these are wooden bungalows with leaky gas heaters and faulty electrical wiring. And I was in a shack a couple of terms ago where we had to put 5 buckets on the floor during rains because we had so many leaks. And it was really, I think that the environment that you're studying in does influence how well you learn, because people who have the nicer classrooms and the ones in the main building, but not the ones that are tight and restricted, you know, the ones where the teachers do have a free hand in decorating and this sort of thing, those classes do seem to get along a lot better. Like recently they moved some of the non-solids into the shacks, and most of the solid classes, arithmetic, you know, English, that sort of thing, social studies, are all in the main building. And I was wondering if any other school besides possibly Galileo was in the same boat.
I can speak for Polytechnic High School. We're in the same boat with you. You know, we have the same thing. We have, like, some of the guys have, I think, mechanical drawing in some kind of, you know, class in the bungalows, you know, and it's cold, it's off on the street, and the doors are flopping open, the windows are shaking, you know, you feel like you're in a haunted
right.
house. So we have the same problem there, you know. There's supposed to be temporary classrooms also, but I don't know how long temporary is.
Well, for instance, the same shack that I was talking about with the leaky roof, our gas heater used to go out so often on cold days. And we'd ask for someone to come over and relight the pilot, you know, and fix us up. And we'd try and clear the gas out of the classroom. But no one would ever come because they were all too busy. And in the end, we just wound up trying to light it ourselves just so we'd get the gas out of the classroom and have a little bit of heat, because we were sitting there with 2 jackets on some days, you know.
Mike, may I ask you this question? Are your bungalows or so-called shacks separated from your school? Are they in...
Well, actually, this is something that relates to what Octavio said. They are on what used to be our recreation space. If you look around the edges of the shacks, you see shuffleboard courts and this sort of thing that were covered up when the shacks were put in. And we don't have anything to do with lunch except to sit around in the cafeteria and in an area close to the caf. And they're trying to discourage us from sitting out on Quintera Street, which is the street that our school is on. And we just don't have any place to go or anything to do with lunch because all these recreation areas are covered with shacks and the gym classes are using the ones that aren't.
May I speak on this also? Same thing with ours. Our shacks are covering our volleyball space. You know, gym, you have one court where gym class can play volleyball because the bungalows are sitting right on top of the rest of the courts. So this our recreation places kind of covered them also with bungalows and whatever you'd like to call them.
Well, you're all expressing concerns, I think, about very similar things, and you're indicating a lack of adequate facilities. And again, I come back to the statement that as we look ahead to what the San Francisco school should be like in the next 10, 20, 30 years, or maybe sooner, of course, as it affects your educational life, we ought to begin trying to solve this problem. It's a very serious one, I'm sure. I've seen enough schools in San Francisco to know that it's going to be a very, very expensive one. I hope the community recognizes the concerns that you're expressing here and is willing to help us solve them.
At this time, I'm Dr. Shaheen. Would you like to ask the panelists any questions?
I'd like to very much. Your questions, your reactions, your feelings are very important to me, and you've raised some real important issues. You have, however, left some very, very important ones out, and I wonder if you would not, or if you would mind helping me to know the reactions of San Francisco students, or at least this group of students here, and whatever you may know of the feelings of others about some of the problems that come to me from students, from parents. Some of these have come in other communities. Some of them have come as I've met students in various places across the country. Let's talk about such things, for example, as drug education. The community from which I came in Rockford, Illinois, just before I left, the students were very much concerned about this. Almost, Louise, in the same type of concern that you're expressing, that the concern for drug education was coming from outside of the student body, that the pressures were coming from the community. And these students wanted, we were talking about hiring, I guess, and I don't like the name, but it was called the Drug Abuse Coordinator. But he was supposed to help in some way to reduce the use of drugs in the high school. And the students came before the Board of Education and wanted to know if they could get involved in not selecting this individual, but in determining the criteria so that they could get the qualifications, so they could get a good person. And they were also concerned, I want you to tell me how you feel about this, they were concerned about some of the movies, films that were being used on drug education, because they thought these used the scare approach, and they were raising some question as to whether this was effective. What do you, Marcy, you want to, I see you're interested in answering this, mm-hmm. What feelings do you have about this?
Well, I know that they're showing some of the drug films now in PE classes, and that the drug films, you know, by using the wrong word or the wrong term, and when the kids are all sitting in the audience, they react with just laughing at the whole thing. You know, that this is, they don't know what they're talking about, and so they just laugh at it, and they walk out of their class and go to the next one, and the drug film means nothing.
When you say they don't know, who do you mean by they? You mean the film?
The film, the people
film
that are making the film. They don't make it realistic enough, because they're trying to imitate something, you know, a scene that they're not familiar with, or that they don't know what it's like to live in.
Mike?
Well, I agree with Marcy completely. I think that sometimes when they'll use the wrong word or something, it does make the students think that they know more about drugs than the producer of the film or the teacher. And I would say that the best teacher of a drug abuse class, which sounds kind of funny right there, but I mean a teacher that would be trying to tell people about the bad effects of using these dangerous drugs, I think the best teacher for this sort of thing would be an ex-addict, an addict that just came off heroin or something, that could say, you know, exactly all the trouble and pain he went through when he was on and as he was coming off. I've heard talks by these people before, and this was the most effective type of drug education I've ever been exposed to.
Do you think it helps for us to throw students out of school when we find out that they're using drugs? Does that reduce the use of it for other students?
No, not at all. I feel that, you know, once the school finds out that a student is using drugs or something, instead of, you know, saying, well, we can't have you here because you're a bad influence on the students, it's like reality now. It just proves that drugs in schools, junior high schools now, it's not really news, you know, because you know that drugs are being used, starting from junior high school, sometimes grammar school.
Is it getting worse or being reduced? Is the excitement all gone?
I feel it's getting worse.
No, getting worse?
Because students...
I thought you'd solved the problem before I came to San Francisco.
No.
Well, see, first of all, I think it'll pick up some more because they take their drugs in the first place so to be happy. And why do they want to be happy? They want to get rid of the problems they carry in them.
Well, are you saying, I heard a student say this a little while ago. In fact, he wrote me a letter about it. He said if you'd make school very exciting,
mm-hmm.
that we wouldn't have to turn to drugs. Do you think this is true?
No.
Yes.
No?
I have to disagree on this.
Because if school
was very exciting every day, people would be used to it, and then it would be the same boring grind.
If school is like
if we had rallies every day, people would be used to the rallies and they'd be cutting the rallies just like the classes. But if I believe that school should be made interesting by sticking things like this in once in a while. It's got to be a break in the routine, not new routine.
I'd like to comment on that. I don't really think the word is exciting. I think the word that we should use is relevant. I feel that if the school systems are more relevant to the students who are attending the schools, you know, there won't be such conflicts with within the school system. And like speaking on drugs, the problem is getting worse, and this is mainly because of the fact that the system doesn't try to be relative to the student. The counseling, you know, speaking on counseling, people don't take the time to sit down and talk to these students who are taking drugs and find out why they're taking drugs. You have to look into the background, you know, look into the family system and how they live, you know, and the reasons that are causing them to take these drugs and deal with them on that level. And once you have broken the barrier, so to speak, and dealt with these students who are taking the drugs, I think that you can motivate them in a sense to turning back to education. But in not trying to help them and, you know, kicking them out of school, they're still going to be taking drugs, and they're still going to be influencing, you know, more people to take drugs, and this doesn't solve a problem at all.
May I ask just one more question? I want to ask Marcy this on this. We could spend just the rest of our half hour on this one alone, but I want to go on to some other things if I can. But first, Marcy, you talked about how exciting the school was,
mm-hmm.
that you go to, opportunity. And relevant, I guess, maybe, if I can use Yvonne's word. Would you say that, from your observation and knowledge, that this relevance and experience, as you say, that this reduces the use of drugs at opportunity? You've got a very exciting, relevant high school.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't say that for everyone it's going to reduce the amount of drugs that they take, but I can, you know, I can talk from friends and some people that it does cut down the amount of drugs that they take, if not completely. Because if you know that you're going to walk into a class and there's something for you to learn in that class, there's something that teacher is going to say which is going to mean something to you that day, you're not going to want to walk in with your head fogged up so that you can't understand exactly what he's saying.
All right, very good.
And other kids, and it's not something that you... It won't happen right away when you're in that school. It's not something that's going to happen the first day when you walk in. But after a couple of months of being in the school, you begin to feel the excitement in the school and the whole feeling of learning.
Yeah, I think I hear you saying, and you correct me, that because school is, again, using Yvonne's word, relevant, that there are many students at opportunity who would use drugs more under normal circumstances that don't now use them either in the same proportion or at all because of the type of school program.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now, I think this is a very significant point for us to make. I'd like to go on to some other things. One of the problems that I encounter as a school superintendent and many high school principals do is in the area of what's called discipline. And, of course, discipline means different things to different people. Now, what do you think? What do you want from us? Again, if you were the superintendent of schools or the high school principal, do you want a school system where the decisions are made for you? Do you want rigid control? Do you want us to watch you most of the time? Do you want us to watch other kids? You're all right. You never get us any trouble. But do you want us to watch other kids all the time? What do you think about this? Jeff, can we have some reaction from you? You're in a big high school. So many kids are running into each other all the time. Do we want a nice, quiet high school where you can hear a pin drop?
I don't think that's very possible because there's always a certain group in every high school that would not go along with the trend of, you know, of society, which, you know, what we have in high schools. Like, a certain system is set up for us, say, that you be watching over us and things. What I'm talking about is administration looking after us. There's always going to be a certain group of young people that will try to change it a little. And like we were talking at our West Campus with you, we were saying that people want a change, and in ways it's good that they want to change, but it can run into a lot of trouble. You know, like you're going to be trying to move out of a system and start a new one. And it's very difficult to talk about having a certain system, you know, set up for a certain school.
Somebody once said there are only four places where only one person can talk at a time. And one of them is in prison.
Right.
One of them is in the military. The other one, I think, was in a library, some libraries. And the fourth one was in school. Do you think there's anything wrong with more than one person talking at a time?
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with one person speaking at a time, because this way you can hear and feel and get a fully understanding of what's being said. You asked Jeff a question about how did he feel about, you know, being able to change the system. I'm speaking with Jeff. I don't think it would be too easy. No, it really would be really difficult to change the whole system, but working with some of the smaller problems would change, you know, a great deal. Like, I'll say with some of the students that you were speaking on using the drugs, you know, having some of the students that, you know, probably, you know, once in practically every student's life, they've come in contact with drugs, or they've come in contact with someone that uses drugs. Like some of us in here now have a friend or associate that has used drugs or does use drugs, and, you know, they're trying to influence you. You say, well, why don't you take some, or it's okay, it won't do anything to you. You say, no, well, I don't think so. And this way, you know, speaking to them and, you know, finding out how they feel about certain things and what drugs do to them and how they feel about certain things that's happening in the school, and get an understanding of them, you know, where their mind is and how they feel about society today, would be a lot easier than, you know, just having a student come into our office and say, well, we found out today that you're using drugs and we don't want this around our campus.
Louise, how do you relate this to the question I asked about discipline? I mean, what do you
drugs,
say?
We find that drugs and, you know, being, like a lot of students say, well, I'm fed up with this school because they're too strict. I'm fed up with, you know, a certain teacher because he won't let you do this or he won't let you do that.
Are you saying that and when they reach this stage, they're more likely to take drugs?
Yes, they feel that they're being, you know, treated, you know, like they were in grammar school. You know, they say, well, he's not letting me grow up, or they refuse to let me be a man, or something like this. So they feel that this is a burden or a big problem, so they decide.
I understand your point now, I think. Marcy?
I think one of the biggest things, especially in our school, when you first come to the school to adjust to, is the freedom that you have in the school. There's nobody to tell you that it's time to go to class, even though sometimes Hal, which is one of our teachers, will walk around and say, come on, it's time to go to class. But there's no bells, and there's no, you know, you never see a student being dragged off or to the office or something like that. And it's very hard if you've been told what to do for so many years, like from the time you're in grammar school, how to deal with that freedom. So I think the freedom and the change in disciplines has to start within the grammar school, so that by the time you're in high school, not college, but high school, you take charge of your own education, and it becomes important to you at that time, not when you get into college.
All right, very good.
I really have to agree with Marcy on that point, and I feel that we should in turn deal with the school discipline code, because this is one thing that definitely needs to be revised, because it's really outdated, and people were working on it and have been working on it very recently. But this is something that we must work with, because schools, we have found, you know, I have found in the years that I have been attending school, are too strict, you know. Just like she said, there isn't that freedom there, and therefore you can't relate to what you're doing, and you can't relate to your teachers, you know, and you're just, you know, in a state of nothingness, you know. You just can't relate to anything because it's too strict.
Can I say something that freedom, speaking of freedom, down at Mission High School, if you notice, we have hall guards.
Oh, boy.
they are called hall aides. Well, whenever you're, like, let's say you're walking down the hall, you know, maybe you're going to restroom or maybe you're a little bit late to your class. You walk down the hallway and here comes a lady or a man, whatever the case may be. They stop you and they ask you for a pass. Now, if you don't have a pass, well, they send you back to get one. But if you say, you know, if you don't, they might take you onto the office.
Well, what do you think of that? I mean, you all have similar situations, practically all of you.
Well, I think that I've seen an instance where a teacher was just being stubborn and wanted to show up the foolishness of this. A girl came into class late, and the teacher sent her down to the dean for a pass. And the dean said, okay, just go on up to class. You've seen me, and go on up to class. So she came back to the classroom without a pass, and the teacher sent her back down to the dean. The next time, the dean, phoned the teacher that the girl was coming in legally. The next time she showed up at the class without a pass, the dean said, you know, to the girl, have the teacher phone me if there's any problems. So he said he wanted the pass for his files. So she had to go down again and get the pass. And by that time, the class was almost over. And he was still griping that it wasn't on the proper SFUSD form, you know. It's just a little piece of paper, you know, admit her to class. And this is really absurd, because if you could just come into class late and just get right into it instead of having to go through the discipline thing, you would miss a lot less class that way.
Dr. Shaheen, we have a new system we've been working on in Poly where, you know, student body officers, you know, we have student government periods, you know, and like some of us have different periods. Say two have first period, two, you know, like this. So what we do is we walk around, you know. Do you have a class this period? They say, yeah. I say, well, do you know where it is? Yes. I say, well, come on, let's get there. You know, we don't have too much time. So I say, okay, I'm going. And now all I have to do is walk down the hall. I'm on my way to class. I'm going. I have to go get my book, you know. And they feel, I think this way they feel like, you know, at least it's not an adult telling them, well, you have to go to class, or, you know, the freedom is like another student telling you, well, come on, I want you to get an education. I want you to learn. They feel this way, you know. So they don't, you know, they don't mind you walking down the hall. I have a pass. I'm going to get my book. You know, they're answering. You don't even have to open your mouth. That's what's happening now in our school. And our dean and the principal and, you know, assistant principal, they're reacting to it beautifully. They don't mind anything as long as, you know, we keep it on the base. Also, we go out on off campus, around school grounds. Some people are hanging on the corners, and I walk up to them. I say, don't you have a class of spirit? Yeah, but I don't like it. I say, well, let's go, you know, because if you're there, and I scare him, I say, if you're there, you know, you might get $75, because for each student in the class, it's $75 a day. They go, really? I say, yeah, they're going to have to pay it whether you go or not. I'm not going to let my money go the waste, and they go to class, you know. So it's, you know, like if a student or someone younger tells them, you know, they're putting a, you know, not a funny, but, you know, in a way that they can relate to the student, then they don't mind, you know, being told or being asked what to do.
Go
ahead.
May I ask you a lot of quick questions, and maybe because we're on radio, you want to react individually to these. I hear a lot of complaints by students across the country about study halls. Is there anybody here that thinks study halls a good idea?
I'd like to react quickly on this one. Study hall, to me, it was a nice idea because I like to write. And I was speaking on this a couple nights ago in a meeting. A lot of people felt that study hall wasn't any good. But I feel the study hall was good to me because, you know, most study hall isn't really explained to me as a student. And when I had study hall, what I did was go in the library each day. I wrote plays, you know, and I took it to an English teacher, and he, you know, he read them and he graded me. And I took them to a study hall teacher. He gave me a B in study hall. This was, you know, my mind was, you know, I loved writing. And it was just to my advantage, study hall was.
You all feel the same way about it?
Well, actually, no, because I haven't been in any official study halls. But every time, for instance, a teacher has a special meeting or something and we have to go to the library, I notice that I can't really study in the school library because I usually wind up talking to my friends and I don't get any work done. And I have to do it for homework anyway. And I don't know how it is, excuse me, in an actual study hall, but I know that I personally can't study in that sort of atmosphere.
I have to agree and disagree with Louise. Study hall at Lowell is, you know, I mean, you can go there and, you know, sit down and you know, maybe do something that you enjoy doing, but yet and still, it's still restricted, and it's a place that you have to go to. There's a room, you know, set off for study hall. You know, you don't go to the library, and you must go there, you know, whether or not you do anything. And, like, you go to study hall, and if you just don't happen to have anything, you know, with you that day, they'll force you to go to your locker and get a book or something like this, you know. And it's it's just restricted to the point where it's not even relevant, you know, whereas you could just go to the library and, you know, it's just taking up time and you have to have it, you know. But in ending, Dr. Shaheen, I'd like to ask you just one question, and that is, I'd like to know how you feel about the IQ and MR testing in the schools in relation to minority students. And I'm talking about, I'd like to give you an example of something. There was a test taken once, and I'm not sure of the county, but, you know, it is documented, where they had these IQ tests, and a Chicano student, I think it was, in an answer to a question, the question was supposed to be answered with the word COAT. There were letters, you know, they were all mixed up, and the answer was COAT, which is coat. But the Chicano student put down TACO, which is taco, you know, and he was graded wrong on this. And I'd like to know how you feel about these IQ and MR tests.
I think we need to recognize that there are many tests that are primarily built, put together for white, affluent students. That, I can even think of some tests. The early Binet test, which is one of the famous intelligence tests, used to have, as part of the test, something which you should answer with the answer a shoe. But what it was, the test was so old that what it was an old boot that looked something like the cowboy boots. And when you showed that to the modern student 20 years later after the test had been developed, most of the students didn't know what it was. And then they also had, and this test has a lot of models in it, they had a model of an old stove like a great-great-grandmother used to have, you know. And you show that to a student, and he would be faced with the same lack of knowledge. Even though he knew what a stove was, he didn't know what that stove was. You know, he had never seen that before. Now, the same type of thing happens with the tests that you're talking about. Things that are within the intelligence of the student don't come through. Also, and I think the same problem I was reacting to when I was talking about Colonel Staff and the astronauts and the students who were raising the questions there are an indication of lack of knowledge, but not lack of intelligence, and there's a difference. We've got to be sure that we're not trapping the youngster by the type of question we ask.
I see. Thank you very much. This has been How to Make It Happen, a discussion of problems and solutions for youth. We are honored to have had as our guest Dr. Thomas Shaheen, San Francisco's new superintendent of schools. We all wish you the best of luck in your new challenge, Dr. Shaheen, and we try to do our best to help you make it happen. Our guests tonight have been Louise Williams of Polytechnic High School, Jeff Kwan of Galileo High School, Marcy Barris of Opportunity High, Octavio Diaz of Mission High, and Mike Swisher of Lincoln High. I'm Yvonne Davis of Lowell High. I've enjoyed being your moderator this evening, and we thank all of you for listening. Next Sunday night at 7 o'clock, there'll be another youth forum program, this time with students from Oakland's public schools. The guest will be Oakland's new superintendent of schools, Dr. Marcus Foster. Be sure to listen next Sunday at 7 o'clock p.m. on KNBR Radio. Thank you.
This is KNBR and KNBR-FM. In San Francisco, the weather forecast calls for fair skies for Tuesday, except for fog and low clouds on the coast, spreading inland in the night and morning hours. Little temperature change, overnight lows to be in the 50s, highs tomorrow and Tuesday in the upper 50s and lower 70s. Northwesterly winds will prevail 10 to 20 miles per hour in the afternoons. The current downtown San Francisco temperature stands at 52 degrees. In 1 minute, news from NBC. It's 8 o'clock. NBC Monitor, news on the hour. Here's Gene DiCardo.
President Nixon visits Dublin Monday and then the trip on Air Force One for the return to Washington. Mr. Nixon met today with his top Vietnam peacemakers to search for ways to get the long-stalled Paris talks moving, but after the session, officials said the president had no cause for optimism, and his new secretary refused to say whether there will soon be a new presidential report on Vietnam or a step up in the rate of U.S. troop withdrawals as previously announced. In a rather festive atmosphere, 1,000 communist-led Irish demonstrators marched in the American Embassy in the Irish capital today, held a mock trial of President Nixon, and burned a stuffed effigy of him. But the events came off without major incidents and were quite orderly. In another effort to reduce the strain between army troops and Palestinian commandos, the Amman government says roadblocks in Jordan are now to be torn down. A broadcast today added that house-to-house searches would also be abandoned by the army. This late word, the Viet Cong has staged 3 terrorist attacks in the outskirts of Saigon. 2 of the attacks came tonight. In all, 27 persons died. In the Indochina theater, another kind of confrontation. This one involves farmers. NBC's Peter Burns reports.
South Vietnam is still bogged down in bureaucracy on its important Land to the Tiller program. 6 months ago, in an impressive ceremony deep in the Delta region, President Chu promised that 2.5 million acres of farmland would be given to the people who lived on the land, tilled the soil, but were turning over most of their rice to absentee land.